His 1927 film Wings won the first Academy Award for Best Picture, and then he won another for writing A Star Is Born, which he also directed. You may have guessed by now that I'm referring to William Wellman, whose other great movies include The Public Enemy, which helped make a star out of James Cagney, The Oxbow Incident, The Story of G.I. Joe, and The High and the Mighty, all of which will be shown starting today in a three-week 42-film festival at Film Forum on West Houston Street. I'm joined now by someone who knew the great man quite well, his son, William Wellman Jr. He's written a book called The Man and His Wings, which tells about the making of the first Best Picture. Welcome to our show.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So what did you make of the fact that your father is reputed to have been known as Wild Bill? Was that something that was apparent to you when you were a kid?
Well, my father always had a temper, but it was something that we didn't know much about. Now, I have four sisters and two brothers, and what we saw was two very devoted parents, and this Wild Bill stuff, we thought, well, maybe that's just something he does when he's away from us. I mean, we didn't really know what that was.
Well, I was struck by the way he's describing Ephraim Katz's Encyclopedia of Film, a hard-drinking, rough-talking taskmaster on the set. He was among the most colorful characters in the film colony and for many years enjoyed a hero status. With you, too.
Yes, for sure. He was many things to me. He was my father. He was my hero. He was my best friend, and he was my companion.
And before he got into films, he had a rather eventful youth. He was put on probation for car theft, but then he dropped out of high school to join a professional minor league hockey team?
Yeah, well, the car theft is interesting because he went to trial for stealing cars. He explained to the judge that he actually never stole a car. What he did was he and his friend would borrow. They would find a car. They would drive it off for an evening of entertainment. Sometimes they would fill it with gas and they brought it back to where they took it. So he said he only borrowed it, but the judge didn't understand the difference between borrowing and stealing, and so he was put on probation, this is another funny thing, for 6 months, and he had to report to the probation officer of the city of Newton, who was his mother. So he reported to his mother every week.
How did he come to join the French Army's Foreign Legion during World War I?
Well, you know, he was a juvenile delinquent and in trouble, and he felt like it was either going to be war or jail. So America was not in the war. He found a way into the Norton Hargis Ambulance Corps, which got him over to France. Then he transferred into the French Foreign Legion, and then from there he was able to get into the Lafayette Flying Corps.
And this was something new in warfare. This is the first war where planes were used. You don't just pick up flying a plane, even if it's a simple biplane.
Well, you know, similar to the story of Wings, the movie about a young lad's dream of flight, my father used to go to a field near, he was from Brookline, Massachusetts, and there was a field called Woburn in Woburn, Massachusetts, and he would watch planes land and take off, and he wanted to fly, but the family didn't have money to take flying lessons, and so he went over and did it for real.
Well, you said earlier he worked with the French Foreign Legion and the ambulance corps, so he was seeing war from both sides, from
yes.
the ground and from above. You include letters that he wrote home from the front, including one to my dear little mother, where he says, "You people in general in the States don't seem to appreciate conditions here." What conditions was he referring to?
The harsh conditions. The, you know, it was so many. Well, at this point, France was pretty much being wiped out, and he saw all that, and he didn't believe that people in America understood how difficult the conditions were and how many people were dying in this war.
So did that experience mark him for life? Is that why he made so many movies that dealt with war?
That did mark him for life. He also went over with a number of his friends, and he met other Americans during his flight school, and nearly all of his friends were killed. He felt a strong relationship a buddy-type relationship, and you'll see it in almost all his movies.
How close did he come to being killed?
Well, he had 6 major air crashes. The last one, he was shot down by anti-aircraft fire, which he always joked about. He said, they couldn't hit anything, but they hit me. His back was broken in several places. They put a steel plate in his head. The control stick of the plane went through the roof of his mouth, knocked his teeth out. He was a singer. He was being trained as a singer, and so that ended that.
But then he came back home?
He came back home, and he...
Everything must have seemed very boring after all of that.
Well, of course, he was a hero when he came back. You know, they made... The members of the Lafayette Escadrille and Lafayette Flying Corps were great heroes at that time. So he was... You know, the mayors and political people wanted to be close to him, and he got awful tired of going to war bond drives and being a speaker and all of this. And so finally, when he healed enough so that he could get back into the service, he went into the U.S. Air Service and was a flight instructor till the end of the war.
As we're hearing, Director William Wellman was a larger-than-life kind of guy, which you can see in his movies, and you can see 42 of those films over the next 3 weeks at the Film Forum. I'm talking to his son, William Wellman Jr., who's also written a book called The Man and His Wings, William Wellman and the Making of the First Best Picture, which is published by Prager. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. So how did he get into the movie business? He had a rather unusual encounter with Douglas Fairbanks?
Yeah. Well, when he was playing ice hockey, when he got kicked out of high school and he was playing semi-pro ice hockey in the Boston Arena, and Douglas Fairbanks was in Boston doing a play called Hawthorne of the USA. And he liked ice hockey, and he came over and he watched, and he took a liking to my father, and they had a friendship. So at this time, Douglas Fairbanks was a star of stage, and he said to my father, if you ever need a job, come out to Hollywood. I'm going out there to be in the movies.
And he did rather well.
He did rather
well. And he gave your father jobs, acting jobs?
The first job he got for my father was an acting job. It was the young lead in a Western called The Knickerbocker Buckaroo in 1919.
So he was the lead, and that means he's riding horses as well?
Yeah. Well, he had no experience with that. He worked real hard to learn how to ride a horse and looked like a cowboy. But when he saw the movie, my father always said that he left before the movie was over, and he went into the men's room and he threw up. And he went to Fairbanks and he said, you know, I'm not cut out to do this. I think I need to do something else. And Fairbanks says, well, what do you want to do? My father said, well, how much do you pay your director? Fairbanks told him, my father said, I want to be a director. Well, Fairbanks said, I can't make you a director, but I'll get you started. And what he did was he got him the lowest rung job in the film industry as a messenger boy at the Goldwyn Studios. And he worked his way up from, you know, to assistant director to director, and there you go. And well, Wings was the picture that put him on the map.
Well, it was a big project for someone this young. But I'm assuming that they took into account the fact that he'd been a pilot.
Well, one of the reasons he got that, first of all, he was a director of B-Westerns primarily when he went to Paramount under contract. He directed one non-Western at Paramount before the Wings business came up, and it was called The Cat's Pajamas. It's a lost film, and my father always hoped that it would stay that way. So
we want all those films to come back. They show us something about how a great director developed, don't they?
Yes, they do. But now Jesse Lasky, he felt that Paramount was number one in Hollywood at the time because he had the best directors under contract: Cecil B. DeMille, Victor Fleming, Joseph von Sternberg, you know, on and on. But B.P. Schulberg, his head of production, said, I think Wellman's the one to do it because he's the only director under contract with frontline battle experience as a decorated fighter pilot in the Lafayette Flying Corps.
But nobody could have predicted just how brilliant the filmmaking turned out. It features some of the most thrilling scenes in the air that ever have been filmed, and he wasn't using CGI either. He had to develop new techniques, didn't he?
They had to develop the whole technique of aerial photography for the movies. It had never been done. What little aerial work had been done in the movies was mostly government films, simulations, miniatures, process shots. No actor had ever been filmed in the air.
17 cameramen got credit for that film. And then there was the cinematographer himself, Harry Perry. I guess he's the one who stayed on the ground while all the others were up in the planes.
Well, they had there were certain ones that were better photographing in the air, but they used they had built two 100-foot towers for the great battle scenes.
Where did they shoot this? Was it with the cooperation of the military?
San Antonio, Texas. Well, that's another story because the original budget was $1.2 million, which is quite an expensive film for that time. And Jesse Lasky's partner, Adolf Zucker, who was mainly in New York handling the finances and the theater chains, said no, refused it. He says, we're not going to make a movie out of it. I mean, are you kidding? Pilots and planes? Specks in the sky? Who can tell the good guys from the bad guys? They all look the same when they got their helmets and goggles on. So they refused it. So Jesse Lasky sent the writer, John Monk Saunders, to Washington to try to get the War Department to maybe put up some funds or do something. Well, eventually the War Department gave them what amounted to $16 million worth of men and equipment. They had 5,000 troops. They had over 100 airplanes. They had pilots. They had tanks. They had artillery. They could have started a hell of a war somewhere if they wanted.
Well, he had pilots. He had to have people who really knew how to fly planes for this. But he also had Clara Bow. This is before she became a superstar?
No.
She was already the it girl?
She was the it girl. It was Lasky's idea to have the best that he had at Paramount Studios in all departments, the biggest stars. But when my father came on board, my father was mentored by a director who told him what you do when the script is yours, even if you're a contract player and you don't get to choose your script, when the script is in your hands, it's your picture and don't let anybody interfere. So my father was not going to do anything that wasn't in the best interests of Wings. And the studio was very upset at him because he threw away a lot of the first aerial work that he shot because it looked terrible. Then he realized he had to have clouds to show speed and perspective. He made the stars take flying lessons. Richard Arlen and Buddy Rogers actually fly the plane. When you see them, they are flying the plane. And the studio thought he was going to kill their stars.
And then he also has a young Gary Cooper in this movie. It turned out to be the highest grossing film of the year. So it was a big hit. And was it a sure thing for the first Oscar?
Well, I don't know if anything is a sure thing, but they had just put together the Academy, and they believed that Wings was the best picture, and it was announced as the winner even before they had the ceremony. But in 1929, when they had the first Oscar celebration, they included films made in 1927 and 1928, so it was a big grouping of films.
Tell us about this new restoration. It's come out in Blu-ray and DVD, so they really had to do a good job. What kind of condition was it in?
Well, the film was not in very good shape. When I first was called to go over to Paramount and they told me that they were going to do this restoration, I was very excited because I had hoped they would do something for many years and they hadn't done anything with it. Then when I saw what they did, it is absolutely fantastic. I mean, Ben Burtt does the sound effects, and they are absolutely incredible. And the musical score from the original score is just great. And it to me, the DVD, the Blu-ray DVD now with the effects and the music is so much greater. Now, originally, when Wings opened in 1927, they had effects behind the screen. They had turntables, and they made these kinds of effects that sounded like the engine of a plane or a machine gun or something. And after a long period of time, I mean, the movie played for two solid years in first run. At one time, they took it out, and they put an effects track and a musical score with it and put it back into first run.
Because sound was already coming in around that time. Now, he really does seem to be a man of contrast, a testosterone-driven film like this or The Public Enemy. And then he does A Star is Born, the first one with Janet Gaynor and Frederick March. And he wrote the script as well. That's a very different kind of movie.
I've been campaigning for the fact that, I mean, my father is known for certain films, but not for his body of work. My father could make any kind of film. I mean, he made great comedies, Nothing Sacred, Roxy Hart. He made war films. He made westerns. He made melodramas. He made kid pictures, gangster pictures. He made all kinds of
pictures. An anti-lynching film, The Oxbow Incident.
Absolutely.
With Henry Fonda.
And that was a film that was the most difficult film for him to get made.
Because it was seen as having a message that might not go well in some parts of the country.
In 1942, we were at war. There was race riots going on in the north. There was internment camps in the west. I mean, this was not a good time to have a lynching of three innocent men. I mean, how the hell he got that through. But he went to Daryl Zanuck, and they had had a fist fight and weren't talking. So he went in, and Zanuck finally said, okay, I'll do it.
Now, how old were you when you got the acting bug?
Well, actually, I was going to Duke University studying business administration, and I'd finished my freshman year, and my father called me from the studio that summer and said, Bill, they got some idea over here that maybe you should come and play me in this movie that I'm doing. And I thought, what? I had no idea about acting or anything. I loved movies. I went on 23 of my dad's sets and locations. I loved movies. But I was sort of thrown into it and knew nothing about it, and off I went. And the second day on location, I said, of the Lafayette Escadrille, I said to my father, Dad, this is what I want to do. And my mother wanted me to go back to school, so they weren't too happy. There was a little bit of an argument there, and my father usually backed my mother in anything she wanted. But this time he said, no, Bill wants to be an actor. He can't learn anything about acting in college. And in 1955, when I was in college, they didn't have the film schools that they have today. So I just thought, oh, God, I love this, and this is what I'm going to do, and there was no way I was going to take anything else.
So how many films have you done?
56.
Wow. Your father also wrote two books of memoirs with great titles, A Short Time for Insanity and Growing Old Disgracefully. How much can we trust? Memoirs are usually quite unreliable.
Well, my father was a very honest man. And in all of the research and everything that I've known about him, I've never found a single story that he made up. Now, he liked to exaggerate, but he would not make any. In fact, he wrote two books that you mentioned. Only one was published. He started a third book, and he stopped, and he told the family, he said, I can't write any more books because I'm out of stories. I would have to make them up.
Isn't there a biographical film in the works, C'est la guerre?
Well, that's mine.
Uh-huh. And how far along is that?
I have a screenplay. I'm trying to get it made.
But meanwhile, we have this book that you've written, The Man and His Wings, William A. Wellman and the Making of the First Best Picture, just in time for the latest Academy Awards. It's published by Prager. Film Forum is presenting Wellman, a three-week 42-film festival from today through March 1st of the Wellman films. And my guest will be introducing the 7 p.m. show of Wings tonight, signing copies of his book afterward. And then on Saturday, the 11th, he'll introduce the 4 o'clock show of Island in the Sky and take questions from the audience after. And then on Sunday, February 12th, he'll introduce the 4 o'clock show of The High and the Mighty and take questions then as well. Thank you so much for being with us and answering my questions.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.